Welcome to Indie Radio Garden, where we bring you highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from the talk show Community Voice PHL, which can be heard on PhillyCam's WPPMLP 106.5 FM. Jeff Jones interviewed DeJuan Short, who's founder of the Dahlia Rose Wellness Center. They talk about how Black girls and Black women should be able to show up as their authentic selves, rather than play roles that society has placed upon them.
A touch on too is, like you mentioned, showing up. And we know that for Black women, that's been a societal challenge because as Malcolm X said, you know, most disrespected, the most hated, the most unappreciated is the Black woman. So it's often, you know, always me and my wife, Jackie, we always talk about that, making sure that Black women, specifically Black girls, have a space where they can show up and feel comfortable showing up. So talk a little bit more about that, if you don't mind. What are like some things that you can kind of help women and young girls get to a space of understanding it's okay to be, you know, who you are and to show up in that space? Mm-hmm.
So I love that question, primarily because it is something that we as Black women, honestly, it starts off as an individual journey, is from what I've seen, right? Like I mentor high schoolers in a local district outside of Philadelphia. And then I also have my clients. And what I've seen is being able to show up for yourself is really a personal journey, because a lot of it is you unraveling, right? Like the things that you've been taught about how to show up. And typically for most of us, we have our aunties, our grandmoms, our cousins, any other woman in our life telling us how we're supposed to be. And then you struggling against what it is that you feel that is true for yourself, right? So for many Black women, right, like being able to be assertive, right? Like if we show up and we're assertive, then it's also looked at as if we're aggressive or if passionate about something, someone may take it the wrong way, right? So it's almost trying to figure out, how do you toe the line of, can I show up for myself, but still be someone that other people are wanting to listen to, but also acknowledge like how smart I am, what all I have to bring, you know, to the table, the fact that I am the full table and everybody else has to like sit around me, kind of a thing, right? Yeah. So a lot of that is really the person figuring out for themselves on a personal journey, what is it that they want, right? Like one of the biggest or two of the biggest questions that I typically ask people is, what do you want? And who are you? And whenever I ask those two questions, a lot of people are just like, what are you talking about? Primarily because nobody has ever asked them that. And so they never had to think about those things in terms of who they are themselves, right? Like you're always thinking about how to give to everybody else. Right. And especially as women, when we go out, we create businesses, or we're thinking about, you know, what type of job to take, or we think about how to take care of ourselves, we're also thinking about, okay, well, if I leave this job, what benefits am I letting go of that could possibly no longer cover my children or my husband? Or, you know, if I take this job, will it allow me flexibility to be able to go care for my parents, right? Like our mindset is always wrapped around other people versus just ourselves. And so a lot of times we also have to struggle with that sense of, well, if I show up for myself, does that mean I'm selfish? Because everybody else around us has taught us that when you are solely focused on yourself, you are being selfish. But in reality, it's okay to be selfish. And I tell my clients all the time, I'm giving you permission to show up for you the same way you do for other people. So all that energy that we give out, we also have to give it back to ourselves. So if you find that you can't give yourself back what you've been putting out, then you're overdoing it in some area that isn't giving back to you, right? And so that all has to be taught. So if I'm a mom and I have a daughter, right? Like the message I want to give to her is, okay, well, if you're doing all this for everybody else around you, what are you doing for yourself? Right. Mm-hmm. But also as a mom, I need to be showing that too. I need to be showing up for myself. So if I'm not resting and I'm running. And when it comes time for me to sit down, mm-hmm. I can't sit because I need to be doing something. That's an opportunity for me to, you know, figure out why am I constantly needing to be busy? What am I trying to distract myself from? Right. Because sometimes we do things so that we don't have to deal with things too. So showing up for yourself is really you being an observer, a gentle observer of your experience, and then deciding, does that still work for me based on where I am today and where I want to go?
Yeah. Wow. Because that's really part of the challenge of the superwoman complex too, or superwoman situation, where Black women are seen as superwomen, and then sometimes they have to take on that being a superwoman. And, you know, like you're saying, maybe they can't let it go because they feel as though people are really dependent on them. But that in itself becomes your own kryptonite, right?
100%. Because it's almost that thing where what's the quintessential? Well, I'm not going to ask nobody because they can't do it how I can do it, right? Like the same reason why a mom or, you know, someone won't allow someone to help them clean their house. It's like, well, they're not going to clean it like me, right? Or if you want something done, do it yourself, right? Like how many times have you heard that? But in reality, it's like, well, if we were to operate from a space of you get to be your own CEO, right? Like you get to be the owner of your life, then why not have other people support you? And for a lot of people especially a lot of women, Black women, you know, for us, having someone to support us means that we also have to be willing to tell other people what we need. But in order for you to say what you need, you have to be willing to know and go on that journey to decide, what is it that I need? What do I need support with? And, you know, it's easier for you to just do it yourself, but then get frustrated when other people around you aren't helping or giving you the same type of energy that you give them, you show up for them. But it's like, but you brought that on yourself because you don't say to other people what you need. But a lot of times it's also because they don't think that people are going to show up for them in that same way. But it's like, all you're doing is creating a cyclical experience where you don't give other people the chance to show you what they can do.
Yeah, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy in and of itself. So it repeats itself and therefore it becomes part of the narrative of what's believed. And I'm sure it happens to men as well. But what I want to also touch on is you mentioned about not just showing up, but also understanding who you are. And that was one of the questions that you asked, you know, what do you want and who are you? I can dare to imagine that, you know, for Black women, that's kind of like a woo-sah, a exhale moment where, like you said, no one's ever asked me who I am. You know, not even my husband, not even my brothers, not even, you know, nobody's asked me who I am. You know, so therefore, I don't even know. I'm a wife. I'm a mother.
Those are roles. And
I'm
telling them these questions. I'm like, this is your homework, right? Mm-hmm. And I also do that for my business clients too. And I'm like, this is your homework. Who are you and what do you want? And then sometimes I may throw in another question that says, what do you have to give up in order for you to become who it is that you're trying to be, right? Wow. Because those questions really make you start to say, if I allow myself to really say what I want, it brings up a lot of stuff because maybe what you want isn't connected to what you're doing today. It might not be connected to that relationship. It might not be connected to the job. So it really means that you would start to have to deal with the reality of your experience and say, maybe I need to start looking at something different, right? Yeah. And normally when I ask that question, I say, I want you to do that, like answer that question every day because who you are and what you want, it changes daily. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, someone may say, oh, well, I'm a mother. OK, cool. But that's a role. So who are you?
Yeah.
Right. Like when these roles are no longer applicable, then who are you? And again, we saw that with COVID where like people were losing jobs, people were working from home. You couldn't identify yourself based on your job anymore or what you did in terms of career because careers have been shifting and changing for so long. So it's like, but then who are you and what is it that you have to offer? So when I ask my clients that, they're just like,
I can imagine because it's just like it's so much to unpeel and unpack, because we and I'm saying we collectively, right? We are so akin to our roles, because society only esteems us if we have a certain role. If I just came up and said, "Hey, I'm Jeff Jones," they'd be like, "Okay, whatever, take a number." But if I say, "Oh, I'm host of a show, I do this," and really? And now I feel a certain level of value and validated because I've defined myself through a role, as opposed to just saying, "Okay, just like me for Jeff Jones," you know. Mm-hmm. So I like that question. I can only imagine how joyful it is to get that question from your client and the work that they do that, because it also leads into the transition of your book, Healing on Purpose, right? The journey, right? So you're setting them off on that journey. So I do want to transition and talk about the book, Healing on Purpose. Is that like part of it, is what we talked about, or is there more to the journey there of healing on purpose? Because, you know, those two questions can really lead to that the journey to 1,000 miles starts with the first step. Listen. Those two questions can be the first step towards that journey of 1,000 miles.
The second feature comes from the new show Boxing on Brooklyn. It's hosted by Crystal Custis and Isaiah Gibson from West Philadelphia's James Schuler Boxing Gym, and it can be heard on WPEB 88.1. We present an interview with John DeSanto, manager at Philly Boxing History.
Boxing on Brooklyn.
Ladies and gentlemen, for all of you in attendance and those tuned in from around the world, the event we have all been waiting for.
So I said the next one has got to be a white fighter. And of course, right, they're in the same boat. And there's a great fighter from the 20s and 30s named Eddie Cool, white, Irish, Catholic, and sort of a folk hero in his neighborhood. He was an absolutely great fighter who beat a world champion in a non-title fight. And then, of course, they'd never touch him in a world title fight again. So he had this, you know, long, great career, but he died with no money and he had a lot of issues and, you know, he had no grave. So gravestone. So got a stone for him. And so I could kind of like, you know, balance that story a little bit. And so that's it. It's just a way to, you know, it does the same thing that my website or that my writing does. And that is, you know, remind people who these people were. And it's the thing that people connect to a lot. Like, you know, people, they say, "Oh, wow, that's that," like sort of it touches them emotionally. "Oh, wow, this guy, I knew him. He was a really good fighter. You're telling me he didn't have a gravestone? Well, that's great. We have to do something and get him a stone." So people participate and they send me a $10 donation or $100, whatever it is. And together we do that. And that's my goal. That's my goal with the website, with the Briscoe Awards, with the gravestone program and all the other stuff. Like I was very involved in doing the statue for Joey Giardello in South Philly, you know, and that's the thing, like how we love boxing. So everybody, you know, they talk about loving boxing, but let's join forces and do some things to like, I don't own a gym. I don't do like what your father and what you do for young fighters. You know, that's not my thing, but I found my way to, you know, do that and try to bring the community together. So, you know, it's been an interesting ride.
A great amount. I mean, and people appreciate you all across the board in boxing. I mean, you have a great amount of respect. And when we attend those Briscoe Awards, you could just see how bright people's faces are and how much they enjoy being amongst each other, because the boxing community is so tight and so small. It's like you see the same people, you know, whenever you go out to any boxing event. But especially the Benny Briscoe Awards, it's like a family reunion, you know, way you bring everyone together.
Well, that's great. I appreciate you saying that. And that's my thing, you know, like boxing, you know, because you're in boxing, and that is that, you know, people love boxing, but a lot of people don't. And boxing gets a bad rap in a lot of ways. And the funny thing about boxing is, like, I like everybody in boxing. Like, you know, there's good and bad people for sure. But like, they're all characters and I love it. But there's people, like, it's still such a competitive thing. And like, you know, this maybe, you know, there's different factions. Maybe gyms are rivals, and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, promoters don't like each other, et cetera, et cetera. Or an ex-manager can't stand this fighter anymore because he left them, or vice versa. So what I always said was the Briscoe Awards are the place where people leave that at the door, and you can look over and see two people that you think you thought hated each other. And they might be sitting there kind of having a beer together or something like that.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more of it. But like, you know, it's a process. The Briscoe Awards get bigger and bigger each year. And, you know, they're doing fine. But it's like there's still fighters that won't come because they didn't get an award. And I'll say to them, well, that doesn't make sense. When you win an award, don't you want everyone to be there? So just come out. So I'm trying to send this message that, hey, we supposedly all love each other and love this sport. So let's do something together. And that's what I try to do. You know, like I try to capture the history. Record the history in all different ways. And the Briscoe Awards do that too, because every year there's a snapshot and you say, oh, who was the fighter of the year? What was the fight of the year? What was the best knockout? Who was the best amateur? And so, you know, when I'm long gone, you can go back and say, oh, what happened in 2010? Here's all the award winners. They were the top, you know, accomplishments for Philadelphia boxing, and it'll leave its own record, its own mark, in addition to everything that, you know, I write or other people write, or, you know, what's going on the website. And that's what I try to do. So that's my contribution, and it's my small part. And, you know, I don't box, I don't train fighters, I can't do any of that stuff. But what I can do is write and try to communicate with people and try to, you know, just put some good vibes out there and try to bring people together. And, you know, it's happening. I want to see it continue, and I want to see you do more of it. And have it be, you know, completely accepted by the community. And, you know, it's getting there, but it's got a ways to go for sure.
Yeah, no, you do a phenomenal job. And things that I've see that you've included is artwork and keepsakes. And so are these given to the boxers, or are these giving to other people? And then how do you seek out the artists and the photographers and the people that donate?
Yeah. One of the things that's really important to me is, you know, like, because I love boxing, and I also collect things. Like, I collect posters and boxing posters and tickets and photographs, things like that.
Yeah,
and the truth is that there are fights, and even, you know, old fight venues, arenas and stuff, they're all gone. You know, a lot of the great ones are all gone. Or the gyms, like before the Shuler gym, there were great gyms like Champ's Gym and all these places. Mm-hmm. And it's like every once in a while you can find a photo of somebody in the gym. It's very hard to find photos outside or the sign and things like that, things that are real historic records. Just trying to find photos of certain fighters is almost impossible. So one of the things that I want to do with all my programs is, you know, like I'll write things. So the word's out there, you know, I've written some bunch of stories and things like that. And, you know, so that's out there. But what really, I call them like evidence or relics of like the past. Like when you find an old poster of a fight that, you know, happened, it's like, wow, it's almost like you're holding a little piece of it in your hand. And so I think by engaging artists to do paintings of fights and fighters. And usually I'll have artists do, you know, paintings of like the winners and things like that. And what that does is it creates something, a physical piece of art of Steve Cunningham or of, you know, whomever it is, you know. And it's like someday, you know, people see that. Like my ultimate goal with my nonprofit is to do a museum. A Philadelphia boxing museum. And, you know, there are halls of fame. There's a big sports museum that's in the works in Philly. But, and I've even had people like say, hey, will you join us with this? And, you know, your partner. And I won't do it because I love boxing. And if you look at sports, I like all sports. I'm a baseball fan, but I'm a really primarily just boxing. If you think about the way sports go, team sports are huge. And if there was a big place that was an all sports museum in Philly, well, it would be all Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, you know, Phillies, all that. And boxing would be back in the darkest little corner. and there'd be Joe Frazier and there'd be Bernard Hopkins and there'd be nothing else. Mm-hmm. And so those guys are great, but their legacies are set. What needs to be immortalized? And I try to do it on my website in a virtual way, are all these fighters that have their own stories. Some are great who became champions. Some almost made it. Some never even got close, but they all have the, you know, similar stories and similar that dream of trying to imagine. See, I can't imagine it. You're closer to it, but I could never imagine getting in the ring and fighting someone for real, you know, with all that at stake. I couldn't do it. I'm not wired to do it. I've done a little backyard boxing with my friends and my brother and things like that. But I really respect fighters and the courage and what it takes. And I continue to try to understand what it takes for fighters to do what they do. You know, I don't completely get it. You know, I get a sense of it by knowing them and seeing the drive that they have, but it really takes quite a bit of courage. And it's a certain type of person that can bring themselves to do that. And I respect that. It's not everything, but it's something that I really respect. And I love those stories. So to answer your question, I do all kinds of things like that. Like, get photographs, have people photograph these people and then have paintings and sculptures and things like the Benny Briscoe, the Briscoe Award. I had an artist do a statue of Benny Briscoe, a statuette. And so that's reproduced every year as the trophy. And then, you know, to extend that, I had another artist create a medal, and it's a really cool, looks like a, you know, it's a bronze medal that has Benny's face on the front and you flip it over and it's got a, you know, Liberty Bell on the back, and it's engraved with, you know, if you won the knockout of the year, it says that and it says your name on it. So these things are out there too. It's something for the trophy case. It's not a world championship belt. You know, I'm sure they don't think of it the same way, but it is something. And for some fighters, it may be the only award that they ever win in their career. You know, guys like, you know, Steve Cunningham, he's won a million Briscoe Awards and he's also been a champion twice and, you know, has a bunch of other things going on. But, you know, for some fighters, it's a way to, it's not just the champions. So my goal, ultimate goal, is to do a museum. And that's something I can't do on my own, like the first gravestone that I did. So I went nonprofit and I continue to pursue that, but it's a big goal. And so one day all these things will be in a museum. I use them in my marketing stuff and on my website, but the actual things are there. I have made prints of them and given them to the fighters or the winners of the Briscoe Award, you know, and I do, you know, variations on that. So, but yeah, it's a program that, like, I like art. And so it's something I thought, wow, it'd be cool to see a painting of Benny Briscoe or a painting of, you know, whoever it is, you know, Julian Williams. I have a great painting of Julian Williams that was done. And he's won a couple of awards and, you know, so
These are the people that you're naming are fighters that come out of James Shuler boxing gym. You've named Steve Cunningham, who is a two-time world champion or former world champion, who actually did he win in two different weight classes or were they both?
He won two world cruiserweight titles. Okay. And then he moved up to heavyweight and he won the United States, the USBA heavyweight title, his great fight against Mansoor. But he got close, but he never got a world title shot at heavyweight. He fought Tyson Fury, who's like the top guy now, and knocked him down. It looked like he was going to knock him cold, but Fury came
first
back
knockdown.
Controversially beat Cunningham, you know. But yeah, so it was two titles, but in the same weight class.
Yeah. And then so let me ask you that while we're on the Benny Briscoe Awards, because I remember attending the Benny Briscoe Awards probably every year for the past, I don't know, maybe 7 years. I'm not sure if Shuler's Gym won anything or a fighter from Shuler's Gym won an award each time I've attended. But I know that either the fighters were fighters from Shuler's Gym, or I mean, I know that there has been quite a few awards won by Shuler's Gym itself, I think, or the fighters from Shuler's Gym. Can you name some of those for me? Because I wish I had the information in front of me.
Yeah, well, no, Shuler Jim is very well has been very well represented at the Briscoe Awards. You know, it's you know, the top gym in Philly, or you know, that you know, I say the top is arguably, you know, at the very least, it's one of the best, but I think the best. And you know, produced a lot of great fighters. And in the past, like past awards, I said Steve Cunningham has won a bunch of awards. He's won Fighter of the Year twice. He was involved in the fight of the year. His fight with Amir Mansour was the fight of the year that year. He also won performance of the year twice. Julian Williams won fighter of the year twice and performance of the year once. Dafir Smith, you know, one of your, you know, originals, like that's one of the guys that's like, you know, I when I think Shuler Jim, I always think of him and Yusuf Mack because they were practically born there, you know. And Dafir Smith won the upset of the year in 2010 when he beat Jeff Lacy, who was a former champion. And he fought Anthony Caputo Smith in Chester. Now the Philly fight of the year has to take place in Philadelphia. So even though Chester's just outside, it doesn't qualify. However, one year, 2013, he fought Anthony Caputo Smith and was a really good fight. So he got a special award for the, I called it the area fight of the year, like, you know, the suburb fight of the year. And he won that. Now, Stephen Fulton, who's one of your current guy who's trained at, you know, Shuler very recently, he won actually last year. And because of COVID, I still have his awards sitting here. They're 10 feet away from me in my office here in a box. He won Breakout Fighter of the Year and Knockout of the Year.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Paul Beam. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.